Welcome to another episode of the Declutter Me podcast. Today I have my lovely friend Sarah, who I've known for a few years. We met on Twitter many years ago. Is it Twitter? Yeah, we were Twitter people as well, yeah. So Sarah has chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a condition involving deep fatigue, not getting enough sleep, and a kind of worsening of symptoms after exertion, right? So it's something people have talked about for years, and I'm sure I've had one or two clients who have got chronic fatigue syndrome or a medical condition linked to it or similar to it. So I thought it would be great to know more about it from someone who has it and also find out about how, you know, to help people who have got clutter and are finding it difficult to deal with clutter when they've got this syndrome. So welcome, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you here. So yeah, let's get straight into it. So what is chronic fatigue syndrome, or what do you have that, or very similar?
So it's chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME, which stands for myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is a phrase I learned at the age of 11 when I was diagnosed.
Okay.
and it's funny to think about it, but even back then, because there's been an awful lot of misconception around the illness, and there still is today, I almost felt that I had to have the medical name for it to be able to prove that it was something tangible and real. Way back when I was diagnosed, which was 21 years ago, there were an awful lot of people in the school of thought that it was actually a psychological condition, and then it manifested itself physically. The science is very slowly catching up, but it's taking a long time to show that it is obviously a physical condition and it can have devastating impacts on people's lives. I'm quite lucky in the sense that I would consider myself functioning. But for many people, they are bedbound for years on end.
Right.
They can't leave the house. They can't work. It's, you know, the thing that used to make me laugh all the time was people would say, oh, I get really tired too.
Yeah.
It's not that. Yeah, no. It's not that. My personal experience of it was I was diagnosed when I was 11. I probably missed close to 50% of secondary school because of it.
So how did you know that it could be a medical condition that had to then you had to go to the doctors for it?
So it's generally triggered by a viral infection.
Right.
And I just started at secondary school and I had I just had a 24-hour vomiting bug and basically I never got over it.
Right.
So I was bedbound for weeks and weeks and weeks, which obviously as an 11-year-old child is just not normal. So yeah. I was being tested for everything under the sun. At one point they suspected that I had leukemia. And at that point, the process for diagnosis was a process of elimination. So they would rule out other conditions and then kind of just say at the end of it, we think that you have chronic fatigue syndrome / ME.
Right.
We don't really know anything about it and we don't really know how to treat it. So that kind of just was the precursor for
you to be diagnosed with it.
And then really just to kind of have to get on with it for the last 21 years.
So how have you got on with it?
I'm lucky in the sense that, as I said, I'd consider myself functioning. So for me, it tends to be that I never feel well or normal, but that I can deal with on a day-to-day basis. It tends to be maybe every 2 to 3 years that I will have a more severe relapse, which hits me probably for about a period of 6 months.
Wow. Okay.
And all through that time, and I think because of the misconceptions around it, particularly from the medical community as well, I'm not just talking about, you know, discussing it with your friends and family where they're not really sure what's wrong, but also from the doctors themselves, I realised, and probably only kind of all came to light in 2019 for me when I went through a sort of grieving period, that I'd been in denial about it for a long time, and I stopped telling people I had this illness and just kind of convinced myself that it was fine, even though I really wasn't. So I was still managing to go to work every day for the most part. And then there would be periods where I'd be hit with, you know, the relapse. And I'd go back to the doctors. They'd test me again for everything. Everything would come back normal.
Right.
And we'd kind of just be in this cycle. So it was almost like I was willing myself to have something else wrong that we could put a label on that people would understand.
Yeah.
But it actually so happened that last year when I was on holiday, I met a specialist doctor and we had a really long discussion about it purely by chance. Yeah. And he really opened my eyes to some of the advancements that have been made in understanding the condition.
Right.
Okay. And I think it was about the time that my relapse was starting last year as well. And I ended up really going through quite a difficult process mentally of understanding how much it had actually impacted my life for the last 21 years. I went to university for 3 months and I dropped out and I came home. I felt like it impacted my day-to-day life a lot, but I'd never really taken the time to process that. So it was almost like going through this grieving process of thinking, what could my life have been
if I hadn't had it? Yeah.
But then when I kind of started to think about it, feeling quite proud of the things that I had still managed to achieve in spite of that.
Yeah.
I'm very stubborn, which helped.
Yeah, we know. So that's amazing. So you went through this grieving process, but beforehand, so you were doing everything
as best as possible.
Right. Okay.
And not really telling my employers and things like that as well. So there would be periods where I would have to take a week off work because I would have I'd get like a regular flu or cold virus, but it would hit me quite badly. And then I just sort of soldiered on through it. Thinking, you know what it's like living in London and commuting and going through that day-to-day grind anyway.
Yeah.
I kind of look back on it now and think I really don't know how I managed to drag myself into work day in, day out. I was exhausted all the time. I was in pain an awful lot.
Right.
I would have headaches. I would have sore throats. It's essentially kind of like feeling like you've got the flu all the time. And then one of the big symptoms is insomnia. So then it becomes a vicious circle. But obviously, you can't sleep through the day anyway because you have to go to work and then you have to come home and then you have to make dinner and then go to bed. And then you have the anxiety of laying awake all night or being in pain, which is something that I've had badly in my last few relapses.
Right.
Is laying in bed and having pain across my body. However, I kind of position myself on the soft mattress and we've had to change it and see if that helps a bit. So all in all, it's just a vicious cycle.
And you can't have like painkillers to alleviate the pain, or it just doesn't work at all?
It gets to a point where you think, do I want to be taking these indefinitely, i.e. is this good for my health?
Yeah.
But I've never really managed to find a medical solution to make it better.
So what about your day-to-day life? So, you know, you talked about cooking and cleaning and... How do you do all of it, and how have you been able to do all of it and not allow like it to take over your life?
I think I've only really started managing it properly in the last couple of years. And again, I think, how on earth did I do this before? But because there was the denial element, because I was young, because I was on my own, I wanted to go out with everyone. I wanted to have the same social life. Yeah. You know, you have the FOMO.
Yeah.
And it's only as I've got older that I've kind of thought, what's important to me? And it's feeling better and not kind of just continuing to go through that onslaught of exerted effort that I don't need to go through. I've also been able to exercise in the last few years, which is the first time I've ever been able to do that. It goes through kind of peaks and troughs, so you just have to learn to really recognize the signals in your own body and how you're feeling. So if I'm feeling good, then I know I can get on with stuff. I can organize my day. I can make sure that we've got food and blah, blah, blah. But for the periods where things are not so good, it is very difficult, because you also do have to then go through the process of thinking, right, do I have something to eat? Is it nutritious?
Right.
Am I getting what I need for my body? Am I doing everything I can within my physical environment to reduce my stress?
Right.
You know, can I manage my workload? So that in itself becomes mentally very tiring on top of physically feeling poorly as well.
Yeah, that sounds really exhausting. Like, I'm exhausted just hearing it. And we're very privileged here. We, you know, living in the UAE, and we can get maids to help us to do the cleaning. So I guess for you, you've got you can have someone to help you on that side. But what were you doing like in the UK? Doing everything on your own?
Doing everything on my own and just, I don't know. I think because you kind of build up the resilience factor of thinking, I've been doing it this long, I can crack on.
Yeah.
And then just sort of having periods where I probably fell into a bit of a hole with it.
Yeah.
And wasn't coping quite so well. But at the same time, I went through all of that alone as well, because I wasn't open with people about the fact that the condition, I still had the condition. Even my own family thought I was better. Because I just didn't feel that I was able to sort of say I have this illness that people still, it's an invisible illness, people still question its validity. There's still the school of thought that it could be all in your head and you're imagining it. And I knew from day one, I knew at the age of 11 that it, that was not the case, because I was feeling things physically. But even when I was diagnosed at the age of 11, I was part of a clinical trial at King's College, which at that time was exploring whether it was something psychological. And I think having that hanging over me at such a young age, but still being aware that that was wrong or it wasn't my experience, was something that I carried with me. So it was just kind of like, right, just get on with it and don't make a fuss and don't tell anyone else.
I think that was the problem. I mean, like, we've talked before that I had, I knew someone at school who had it. That it was, you know, everyone went, oh, it's in her head, because she'd been so strong. And, you know, not the nicest person in the class, and so for her to suddenly go, you know, and not being at school and having
and that's it. And I had that experience too, because I was in my first year of secondary school when I joined, which is, and it was an all-girls school, and it's you know, it's really difficult. You kind of want to get into your friendship circles, and one day I'd be there and one day I wouldn't, and people didn't understand, and they were kids. So I did, I had a lot of problems kind of settling into school because of that.
We're all for it. I went to a girls' school as well.
Oh, it was horrendous. Yeah, it was horrendous.
And we're teenagers, so we got all the hormones running around. It was the worst.
Yeah, it's a difficult time, I think, for young girls anyway. And then kind of having such a big change and going to secondary school, and it's difficult anyway. And then on top of that was the fact that I was bedbound. But there were days that I'd go in and be fine, so people would see that and then think, well, why is she faking and why is she not here? You know, it's to get out of homework and stuff like that. When all I wanted was just desperately to be part of the sleepovers at the weekend. And you know, my mum had to say to me, you can't necessarily do everything, because it's going to make you more ill. She was going through the process of understanding the illness and watching her daughter, you know, be bedbound and whatever else. So it was mentally very difficult for both of us, I think, to go through it as well.
So what have you done now? So you said you had that process last year that... others who are going through it?
I think I'd really kept my head in the sand for so long. I'd stopped researching, I'd stopped looking anything up. I'd kind of just given up that there was ever going to be a way to kind of manage or cure it one day from a medical perspective. The doctor that I met started to talk to me a lot about the latest research that's come out. Some doctors who are kind of going a little bit rogue against pharmaceutical and political systems to... bring awareness to it in a different way. So for me, it was really thinking about diet and also thinking an awful lot about your physical environment, from the perspective of the amount of toxins and nasties that we expose ourselves to on a day-to-day basis. Whether you've got a chronic illness or not, I think it's something worth thinking about. And if you and as well from the food perspective, if you look at like the advent of chronic illnesses that exist these days that didn't exist 60, 70 years ago, there's a direct correlation with the way we consume food and the food that's produced, the way it's produced, the fact that we eat a lot of rubbish that we probably hadn't really thought about. And you, like, thinking about how we were kids and what we would eat when we were kids versus what we would eat now is very different. So I think awareness is going up generally around that as a health factor. And that we're probably not doing our bodies much good with a lot of the stuff that we're putting into it.
Yeah, there is that. I have an issue with GMO stuff. I know that if it's GMO flour, then I'll get very sick. And so it's a problem eating bread now.
I mean, look at everyone who's battling things like IBS and celiac disease and, you know, lots of these conditions, as I said, that weren't necessarily so much of a problem 50, 60, 70 years ago. And now it's really impacting our health, and it's directly linked to our lifestyle.
It's lifestyle and the grains and everything. So, and of course, I am a decluttering show, so we need to talk about clutter. So you seem to have controlled it. You've been able to manage it. Can you help others who might have it, how you have been able to control the clutter in your life? Because I've seen your house. It's nice and...
Yeah, I mean, organized. I feel like my dad always used to say to me, you know, home is your sanctuary. When you're ill, when you're spending so much time in bed and not really doing an awful lot,
yeah.
you want to feel that that space is somewhere calm and somewhere that's going to help you to relax and to feel better yeah. in as fast a way as possible. So I'm quite a tidy person in that sense. I wasn't when I was a teenager.
Right.
I had a very unsettled home life, not particularly conventional. And I think that probably played into some of the sort of stress, added stress on top of the illness as well. Like yeah. look, when I think about it looking back, and I think that that's really informed how I want to have my home environment today. So I'm quite a clean and tidy person. I think the thing is, you know, you just have to recognise today's a good day, I can get some stuff done, or today is not a good day. Please be kind to yourself. Don't put pressure on yourself. Yeah. Go and lay in bed and feel better.
Right. Awesome. So yes, I think that's everything. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about?
I think the talking about environmental factors and making sure your physical space is kind of as clean and as optimised as possible.
Yeah.
I'm not evangelical about this at all, and I think we have an awful lot to think about and a long way to go
yeah.
from an environmental perspective and from a what we're doing to our bodies perspective. But personally, for me, it really made me realise how much we're exposing ourselves to in terms of toxins and
yes, there is that.
Things that are not very nice. So something that I did that was very simple that I thought this is hopefully going to have a positive impact was changing my cleaning products to non-toxic products.
Yeah.
To thinking about what do I put on my hair and my body and cosmetics and things like that. Yeah. And the great thing is now awareness is really rising around that, and there's such a great selection on the market that you can slowly start to replace things as they run out, which is what I did, rather than go and waste money and buy everything, you know.
Which is a good thing, because people do that. They buy everything, you know, because everybody else is buying all this, you know, environmentally friendly stuff or organic stuff.
Wait and see how you get on with it too. So if something's running out, then go and perhaps try you know, a cleaner version of it to replace
exactly.
it with.
Exactly.
And for sure with things like makeup and cosmetics, obviously it's super expensive in the first place, so it would be silly to go out and replace everything. Just sort of dip your toe in and see how you get on with it.
And you have to also see if you it does work for you, because some things are still got chemicals, so they'll still make you feel a bit alert, you know, you can have allergies to it. So that's great. Thank you so much for that. It's been so informative. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.